بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. معتز عزايزة, welcome to the Mo Show podcast.
أهلا وسهلا فيك, شكرا لك.
هلا فيك حبيبي. So I was back and forth with the team, should I give an intro, should I not, and then we created an intro and I loved it so much, and I think it's important for those people coming across you for the first time, who I'm sure are very few. This will be for their benefit.
No, but I think there will be more because my followers, okay, millions, but also there's billions of people in the world didn't know me. So,
well, hopefully many more will get to know you after this episode, inshallah.
Inshallah, it's about to know where I'm from and why they should know me.
Yeah, the message. Today, we are joined by a voice the world simply cannot and must not ignore. Mu'taz Azaiza is not just a Palestinian photojournalist. He's a witness, a storyteller, a symbol of unwavering courage in the face of unimaginable horror. History had other plans. When the bombs fell and the world looked away, he chose to stay and stay close with his camera as his weapon and truth as his mission. A Nobel Peace Prize nominee and one of Time Magazine's 100 most influential people in 2024, Mu'taz documented the brutal 2023 and 2024 assault on Gaza, risking his life daily to show the world and others, to show the world what others tried to hide. His photograph, Seeing Her Through My Camera, didn't just go viral, it pierced global consensus, earning its place among Time's top 10 photos of the year. With over 17 million followers on Instagram, Mu'taz didn't just share images, he ignited empathy, accountability and action. Even after losing 15 members of his own family in an Israeli airstrike, his message remains unshaken. Gaza is not just a story for your timeline, it's a plea for justice, humanity and hope. Evacuated to safety, but not silence, he continues to speak, to fight and to remind the world, don't just watch, we must remember, we must respond. That wasn't easy for me to read.
That's good, yeah. Thank you for this. I really, if someone will tell me, give me a bio about you, maybe I'm not going to give him better than this. So thank you.
I said this before and I'll say it again. I think it's an inconvenient time for people who are trying to hide things in whatever world that is, specifically what's happening in Gaza. I think the social media era is an inconvenient reality for the Israelis who tried to show the world that they are the victims. And today, and the number is growing, many people around the world are having sympathy and empathy more than ever for the Palestinians. And that's because of the work that you do. I just want to start with that and say thank you on behalf of many people watching this episode.
Thank you so much, Johan. First, thank you for having me. And second, all what I did is my duty, and this is not my first time. I've been doing this for years, and whenever I'm trying to make Gaza look beautiful through my pictures, an aggression and an airstrike happens, and I'm there on the top of one of the buildings in Gaza trying to document and trying to capture what is happening, show the world. Days after, it's stopped, and then again I'm going back to my life in Gaza. The normal life, which is not normal for the world. And I'm sharing my reality for years. And in 2023, it was the year that I also captured aggressions against Gaza and on May. And also, I didn't get that much of attention from the world. But before the end of the year, the whole world was seeing Gaza through my lens, and millions of people now know the truth and know the reality and know what we have been suffering before even 7th of October.
When you hear a nomination for Time, top 10 photos of the year, nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize, do you have a minute to celebrate and think to yourself, I'm happy that we're getting recognition from such enterprises, if you will?
Actually, I feel sorry for myself, and I keep feeling that this is not fair for me, for Mu'taz, because I've been dreaming always to be like a global photojournalist that the world recognize and see his pictures. And but when I get a nomination for the work I've been doing, or on or a prize or something in these times, I feel this is not fair for Mortaz and all the effort that he bought, because first, I can't celebrate it. I can't talk, I could say, in a way that shows I'm happy about it. And I don't feel that, like I deserve better to feel happy about what are my achievements in this life, like anyone in the world. But these circumstances, it will be like, I feel like it's shame for me if I will celebrate anything, because when you feel like, when you like get an award as a photojournalist in normal days for like a work you did in the area and you left, okay. But when your home is under a genocide and...
How can you celebrate that?
Your people are being like massacred minute after minute, and I don't think there is anything worth in this world to celebrate about. Or you feel like you lost something in you, that is the young guy that is happy about achievements, that people who are older than him and who tried a lot and like didn't get that nomination or something, and you did hard work, and not just now, for the past years, and you really deserve it, well deserved, but you can't enjoy it because you really don't feel it, and you have your people that you're using and you are losing every day, and it's not right to celebrate about. Oh, you will not have the feeling to feel happy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like the Nobel Peace Prize. Okay, that was cool, good, and when I went there, I went because I want to show my present there that I'm a Palestinian photojournalist from Gaza who's still 25 years old, and he's on the seats of one of the nominees who's supposed to win like the Nobel Peace Prize, and he's there, like Palestine is there. So this is like the reason why I would go even if I'm not happy about it. No, I'll make the whole world see that a Palestinian young photojournalist is there. Yeah.
To represent.
Yeah. Because you're not representing yourself anymore. You represent your home, your people, your country.
I get it. It's bittersweet. You know, anyone else would be running up and down. You know, I'm nominated for Nobel Peace, but with you, it's like, how can I celebrate it when what's happening is happening? If we were to stake a step back to your early days, was there a moment in time in your childhood when you came to the point where you were aware that you were living in what is an open air prison? At what age did you realize that something just feels wrong here?
On the age of maybe 16, 15.
16.
Yeah. And after I finished high school and I start photography in like the end of my high school, and I start to touring Gaza with my camera. You know, I'm from Gaza and I never had a chance to tour it, to be everywhere, to see everywhere in Gaza. And with the camera, I was everywhere, you know, and I was like having a reason why to go out from your house and go here and there, be in the refugee camp, be on the beach, be on Rafah, Khan Yunis, east of Khan Yunis, be in Deir al-Balah, be in the middle area, be in Mughraga, be in Shahr Ashara, 10th Street, we call it, be in Gaza City, be on the north, Jabalia, Bit Lahia, Bit Hanun, be in Johr al-Dik, everywhere. So the camera was the thing that made me understand Gaza more. And in 2018, I got a shot in my leg by an Israeli sniper on the borders. I was there as a paramedic, as also a photographer with the PRCS, documenting the protest after Trump recognized like Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, not Palestine. So there was a lot of protests on the borders, and I was there and I got a shot in my femur. And
was it a bad shot?
No, it was like the plastic one, but it's like, I don't know what they call it.
The rubber bullet?
The rubber bullet. But it
still hurts, I'm sure.
Yeah, from a sniper. And it was my first time to get like injured from occupation. So Huh. And it hurts. Really, it hurts, and it made me bleed. But yeah,
did you see who it was?
No, they're far, and you're like standing. There is a lot of fire, and also like they are behind a lot of sand. So yeah, I didn't see who was. Yeah, and I was paramedic with clear signs that I'm a paramedic with a PRCS. And then I was also joining the PRCS in their ambulance, so you can move easily in Gaza. And when there's a war happening, airstrikes, I used to sleep, not even to sleep, like to be in the station, ambulance station, for days, and covering the aggressions that is happening. When it stopped, I go to back to my life, the college life. Like I went to college in 2016 at Al-Azhar University, and I didn't know what to study. I didn't find anything to suit me. So, okay, I said I will learn English in university to be a translator and use the language to help me beside the photography. And
how was your English before?
Wasn't good.
So if you didn't study English, we probably wouldn't be doing this in English.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you studied English.
But yeah, okay, thank God. But also my grammar sucks, so I was really a loser in grammar. But it's my second language, and it's not my first. It's not my mother tongue. So, and then,
of course,
yeah. But I wasn't really learning a lot from university, as I was practicing through like movies and also on the field when someone from outside come. You need a translator or be around the translators. And I like just see what they do, like, and try to learn. I've been always someone who would love to learn. If something I love and I like, I will learn very fast. Like photography, you know? And I've been always like, in my college life, it was about going to university sometimes and finding a work. So I've been working since I was in the high school, maybe.
Like keeping busy.
Yeah. And also because I want to upgrade my equipment. I want to also, because also from a young age, I was responsible for my family.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like since 2015, I was like trying to find a work. I worked in a shawarma store, like shops. I worked in like making AIDS cartoons. Like when you get like, someone who want to donate something towards the organization. Yep. So I was the one who put the sugar and the rice and the oil, like in the boxes. And I was a young boy and get like
for bait. Humanitarian aid.
Yeah. So I was this guy who always want to be something.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm going to be, but I want to be something.
Okay.
So, you know, like I'm the one who always dreamed and wished for things. And the moment he got it, he didn't enjoy it and didn't feel it. And then, okay, you know. Traveling was, oh my God, I want to travel. I just want to go out from the gate of Rafah crossing.
Yeah.
I went out. Now, I like kind of easily go here and there. But I don't have the feeling because I don't feel like I'm traveling first, like in a good summer circumstances. Like I'm traveling and my grandma told me I'm hungry, I don't have food. So, you know,
are you going to enjoy yourself?
Exactly.
With that?
So you don't feel enjoy. Like people tell me, like, since I left from Gaza, tell me, go like disconnect, have a trip for you, go to beach, enjoy something. But I'm okay. I don't feel, even when I go and try to enjoy something, I feel like I'm doing something wrong.
Wrong. Yeah.
I don't feel like it's fair for me. And I feel like, no, life is not fair. No. Even if you survive and this thing, but your heart is not okay and your brain is not okay, your body even is not okay. So yeah, I used to work in college, and then I was trying to, I was in good academic way. I was a very good person in the practical. I'm a very practical person. I don't like to sit and study and
C-. Did you always want to be in the field? You always wanted to be out there.
I'm the
in
field,
action.
Guy, field you know? Guy. I'm the field guy. If you want to get results from Mottaz, just make him in the field.
At least you knew what you wanted. School,
and I was always trying to chase what I want, you know. I worked in many different things in Gaza. I worked in a telecommunication company as a photographer. And they usually make you work for 1 year, then they get new people. But I kept working for 3 years because I was a good photographer with them and have a good experience. And it was a way to make money and make connections. And all after like that, I wanted to travel. So I, after 2020 war, I covered the war for 11 days. And after that, I said, I want to travel for myself, for my photography. I'm sick with always like aggressions, then try to find pictures. And then I reach a point that I don't find anything new in Gaza to photograph. Like I've been everywhere.
Seen it all.
I want more. I want to explore.
Yeah.
And you know, like I always, you know, like there's games that make you like, okay, we will see this map, but the other maps is cloudy. This is Gaza for me, but you know, I feel like everywhere is a cloud in Gaza. It's like GTA. You can cross GTA Vice City.
Yeah.
You want to cross it, you can't.
Yeah.
You know? So this is what's Gaza for me.
You're confined to
exactly.
Just that. Yeah.
So you need to finish a lot of missions till you, and same for Gaza. Like I wanted like to travel. I went first to Egypt for my first time. I worked hard. I got some money and I made some money. So, okay, I want to travel. To chase my dream as a traveler photographer. Okay, let's go Egypt. It's a good start. I went to Egypt. And I still remember the first moments I saw a train. Saw airplane. Not like F-16 or
civilian plane.
Yeah, you drive in a car for 6 hours, 7 hours. Not for 15 minutes. I'll be in Gaza from my city. And so different new culture, new people. And
which for people who don't know, Gaza is about 25 kilometers.
It's like
by 10?
Like, no, and like this, yeah. It's 46.
40 on the coast.
Yeah, but like this from the borders with the occupation.
The width.
To the sea, it's like, yeah, around 18, 20.
18.
Yeah, something like this.
So 18 by 45 kilometers.
Yeah.
That's it. That's, yeah, you're doing that in 15, 20 minutes.
Very crowded place.
Crowded. One of the most densely populated places in the world.
More than 2.3 million people in this area.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And every street is different from the other. Different, you'll find people speaking in a way here, people speaking in a different way. People like here, like very conservative. People here not conservative.
Hmm.
There's a lot of big different like
cultures, different cultures.
Yeah. Like most of the majority are Muslims. We have also Christians in Gaza. Yeah, but before there was like around 1,700 people only. There were more before, and we have like two churches.
Okay.
Yeah, and all one of them it's like the oldest one in the area, maybe. Yeah.
Any other religions besides Muslim and Christianity? I'm just curious.
No, but there was some people in Nusayrat refugee camp. They are followed to, I don't know how, the Ibrahimiyya or something that they're Muslim, but I think like Sufiya. Sufiyin. So there are some of you.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes,
very
yes.
Minority.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're like, where tomorrow is Eid, but they are breaking their fast today, but tomorrow's Eid, so they're always different about us. And always like in Gaza, like you can easily make like people talk about something, anything happens because it's small, so people very hard, like very easily they will notice it and start to talk publicly about what is happening, why they're doing this. Yeah, and there was like people who are like Salafiyin, so yeah, there was like a lot of I'm not calling it like culture difference, but it was area differences. I don't know,
big clash.
Yeah,
shwaya.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah,
maybe also, a bit of judging as well. And
exactly.
Oh, you shouldn't be doing that. You know, I
it's like in, from outside, it's a very conservative community.
Okay,
and it's not an open place, so it didn't like people didn't see the world. How it works outside. And when someone like say, like I was here, I'm in Doha, I went to Umrah for just 2 nights and I went back to Doha. Okay, I did Umrah, alhamdulillah. If someone do Umrah in Gaza, he will spend 2 weeks and coming back to Gaza. Then he'll spent like around 2 weeks after people coming and congrats like him, and he provided him like sweets or something and misbaha, miswak. People like come and congrats him, and because it's not like reachable for everyone
to leave.
And yeah, to leave. And also it costs more from Gaza because it's besieged. You need to be a bay for coordinations and traveling. So, and like employment is around 78% from the community, or 80%.
Unemployment.
So yeah.
Almost 80%.
Yeah.
20% of the Gazans work.
Yeah. And also like workers, not in official like jobs.
It's a big number of unemployment.
Yeah. So it's not, nothing is really easy. Like it's not, not everything is accessible for everyone. And there's something known about Gaza that most of the journalists and like a lot of things, people don't get any opportunity before. But in the war, a lot of people start to call them for work. Agencies, organizations, magazines. So it's a war. People are losing their life, but also create opportunities for people who are losing hope and not finding anything to work about. So it's really not a cool, like, doesn't sound nice thing.
No.
But this is your reality. So yeah, I was like covering as a time, and someone called me for like to make a documentary about what's happening. And okay, I worked on a documentary. I documented, I was in the streets, and I documenting very well, you know. And yeah, I worked, and I did the documentary. Took a lot of time because it was my first experience, and but I did well, you know, and I got paid and I finished all the.
This was 21,
22. At the end of 2021.
Okay.
So I finished all the money that the camera shop needs for me.
Paid them back.
After that, I want to upgrade. So I bought a camera from a friend that he doesn't use because he works in like wedding photography, and like a Sony doesn't have a lot of lenses in Gaza. He offered to me, you say, we can replace it.
Yeah.
If you want to bring me the Canon, I'll give you the Sony.
Yeah.
Said, okay, man. Because I had Sony before, 2016. That's like a friend camera that I've been using. And I like it. But after that, we didn't see any Sony cameras. And like early in 2021, it was like, I don't know, a lot of people start to use Sony more than Canon that time.
It's trending.
Yeah, you know. I said, okay, but it was the A7 R3. And I like high megapixel. It's 42 megapixel.
Wow.
Much better for
sharp.
Yeah. And I have the 35mm lens, and I took it, I started to try it, started to use to it, and I like it more, you know. I started to take a lot of good picture with it. And yeah, I continued. I started to buy new lenses, work with Honor USA on the ground, and until I broke my lens in 2023, early in May. And I continued taking pictures and doing work, trying to figure out how I will travel. And a friend of mine, he was trying to convince me to travel with him to Egypt to like have like a vacation, have like to have fun. And I was going to say yes, you know. We were going to beach in Gaza, taking car, in his car, like going here around. And I've been always like also sitting in my favorite cafe in Gaza. Its name is Bellini, and I've been also meeting a lot of people, even though I like to be alone, you know, meeting a lot of people. A lot of people know me, and I refused to go to him. I said, man, I have a lot of work, and I need to continue my contract, and so I can't go. He traveled on the 6th of October. Then the early morning, 7th of October happened.
The day before, huh?
Yeah. So I was traveling from Gaza. I was really thinking about it.
Anyway. Yeah.
And then pneumotas that everyone saw. Yeah. But everything before was really a struggle, but it's not seen. And a lot of details, a lot of things that is happening. But after that, everyone is watching. But it was like the end of the episode, you know.
How many followers did you have on October 6th?
25,700.
25,000.
Yeah. By like end of December 2023, I reached 18.6 million followers. So during like 3 months, maybe.
You told me off camera around 2 million people decided to unfollow you.
Yeah.
It's not very nice.
I don't care. I didn't ask anyone to follow me.
So October 7th, 2023.
Yeah.
What I don't understand is that the Israeli army ranks as 15th most strongest military in the world. How on earth was there a breach in their border for the first time since the blockade?
People say that Israel know about it and they allowed it to happen. Second, it was Shabbat, Sabbat. Yom Sabbat, al-Yahud, Jewish, like Israelis don't fish, they don't do anything. No trade, nothing.
But surely their borders are still guarded.
Yeah, but even the soldiers like, and there was like kind of a quiet kind of few months before, nothing's happening. Well planned, we don't know. They know, we don't know. But after a couple of weeks from 7th October, Israel said that we knew about 7th October like weeks ago. So you don't know. And there is not like something really official that you can rely on. So we don't know. We also like was very surprised. Like us, the people of Gaza, was very surprised and shocked more than Israelis.
I remember it was actually, everyone was talking about decapitated babies. And Piers Morgan was pushing someone who said, yes, there were, you know, babies were decapitated and there was no proof of that at all.
No way.
Yeah, absolutely not. No. And I think early days, 2-3 years ago, when Piers Morgan was very, like he was defending the Palestinian case back then, saying, you know, where was it? Show me proof. And there was no proof.
Yeah.
Articles were being written in Israeli press stating that, but there was absolutely no proof. Was it just a case of an opportunity that they wanted to pretend that they got hit so that they can strike and do what they wanted to do, which is ethnic cleansing and genocide?
You can say that, yes. But also, no, nobody believes that any Palestinian, whatever he like, is Hamas, is other, working with other party or organization, could do this. And then we are Muslims even, so we didn't do this. There was a lot of things, the bad things that happened, but this could never be happen. And we didn't see any proof about it. So
no proof.
Yeah. In Gaza, we see, but we show also proofs. So we don't lie.
Yeah. Yeah. I read an article in the New York Times, Mu'tez, and it said, Mu'tez Azaiza captured Gaza's suffering, but nothing has changed.
Yeah.
That must be heartbreaking. How do you reconcile your impact with the inaction of the world? Everyone saw, when it comes down to it, nothing really changed.
Okay. First, it's about what kind of change you are seeking. You know, for me, I'm seeking stopping the war, stopping the killing and massacres of my people. But the change is happening that people are like, awareness of the people is raising and they know more now. They start to read, start to answer, so ask questions. So this is like what I'm doing, but I'm looking for something else.
Yeah.
So this is why I feel like nothing had changed, because nothing good happened to my people through all the influence that I have. And because I was like seeking a different goal, but while like I'm trying to seek that goal, a lot of things was like, it's like a big accomplishment, but I didn't take a look for it. But it was good. So yeah, maybe like raising awareness, people start to ask questions, people ask to boycott everything that's related to the Israeli occupation. People start to learn more about Palestine and the cause. Maybe the worst thing that happened, that people start to know about the cause after 7th of October. Yeah. So a lot of people are like thinking that the cause started on 7
started
October.
Started on 7, yeah.
So yeah, this is a bad thing to have it. But also, there's a lot of people are like now aware.
How many massacres were there before the 7th of October? I want the millennials who are listening right now to know.
Like in 2022, it was the deadliest year for Palestinian children. A lot of Palestinian children have been killed by Israel. And it's a year that by a report from international community, that 2022 was the deadliest year for children, Palestinian children. And also like in 2017, I witnessed a massacre for 16 persons got killed by Israel. In 2021, there was a lot of massacres and aggressions in Gaza. In 2018, like hundreds of people lost their life in the Great March of Return. Like in 2014, 3,000 martyrs got killed by Israel. Every time there was a Palestinian getting killed by Israeli occupation. And you don't get that attention, you know, even if you got that big attention, nothing changed. But at least people now know, like, because people think that this is the first time we do this or to cover these aggressions or bombing or strikes. But this time is different for us because it's a genocide. But before it was, yeah, this was happening. Our life wasn't okay.
For the younger audience who are coming across their first war between Palestine and Israel being 2022, 2023, and until today, 2025, they need to know that 90 years ago, Palestine was safe. Palestine operated as normal as a normal, safe first world country operated. People were going to their offices. They were going to their markets.
They had airports.
Thank you. I was going to say airports, probably seaports as well. And I actually saw a picture recently on Instagram of the airport in Palestine. And the first boat of Jews came in the 20s, if I'm not mistaken, 20s or 30s.
Yeah, maybe even Iranian. The 1918. Yeah, so
just over 100 years ago.
Yeah.
And the Palestinians welcomed them.
Yeah, they welcomed them. There's pictures that show the Palestinians welcoming.
So we can just draw that picture where you welcomed visitors that over time they chipped away at your land.
Yeah.
And we were talking on the flight when we came in today that in the past 70 years, it went from 100% ownership of land to today it's about 18%.
Yeah.
That they have been, you know, if you forward to 1948 and Nakba and then 1968, more land was lost there. And then the wall eventually came up, you know, in the West Bank and in Gaza today. Exactly. And then today it's about 18%. So again, 100 years ago, it was a very normal state that just over the years they started losing their, you know, their statehood, if you will. You look at that, fast forward to the next 50 years or so, what does your hunch tell you? Like, where do you think this goes? How do you think the future plays out, Mertaz?
Actually, it's a blurry future, actually, so... Because what you are watching right now, what you see and what's happening and how the world is like shifting and the awareness and all of this. And many countries are recognizing the state of Palestine. Now, it's something good but on paper and media, but on the ground, nothing is changing for better. It's changing for worse. Like, it's like every day there is a Palestinian being killed by Israel occupation, before or now, yeah. So we're seeking something on the ground. We're seeking freedom. We're seeking dignity. We're seeking justice for Palestinians everywhere. We're seeking refugees to go back to their places, and we're seeking like a freedom of movement. Where we seeking airport in Palestine. We're seeking
basic rights.
Yeah, that everyone have. You know. So we missed this, and we didn't know even how it feels. Maybe I know because I travel, but others doesn't know.
They don't know.
Yeah, they just know jet fighters. They know tanks. They know soldiers. You know, so they didn't know the real life how it looks.
After the Nakba of 48, would you say 2023 till now was the worst massacre, the worst hit in the history?
Man, Nakba was nothing compared to what's happening in Gaza today, you know?
This is the worst.
If you will compare it to what's happening to Gaza.
I want
to
understand this.
I don't like to reduce what people have been through, but it was like, it's called a Nakba. But yeah, all what happened in Nakba today is happening in Gaza in front of the whole world, and at least there's media showing. And everyone is like, know what is happening and see and more of bad things that is happening there. More of atrocities. So yeah, a lot of bad things that is happening. Worse than the Nakba itself. It's way more than Nakba.
I have a note here and I wanted to read it out to you exactly the way I wrote it. Palestine has exposed the hypocrisy of global platforms. Have you personally experienced shadow banning? I remember Sean King had his account with 6 million followers deleted back in December 2023. I remember when I'd post stuff on my little account in comparison to yours and Sean King's, I'd get maybe 5% of the viewership. So it's just a little funny because it's a platform owned, you know, in the US that is supposedly the land of the free, and here they are controlling the corridors of where information is passing. If you support Palestine, we're not going to show your content to people. Have you ever been a victim of shadow banning?
Man, yeah.
Yeah.
Now I'm followed by 16.8 million followers. Most of the days of the week, I just get like 200,000 views on my story.
1%, 2%, 3%, what is that?
Nothing. And most of my posts doesn't reach. A lot of people see, like, some people meet me outside. Hey, it's been a long time we didn't see you posting anything. Yeah, my account doesn't show in some areas. And if you'll search me, you'll not find even with my full name. So I've been through a lot of restrictions and limitations until now. But maybe it's more like less than before. Before they were like suspend all my account. And but yeah, the pressure of the people was really good with me, and they supported me very well. Until Meta fired an employee in Meta because he tried to fix mistake in my account. Like, my account was labeled as a pornography content.
They really didn't want the world to see your content.
Yeah.
So that's how they shadow banned you, by saying that you're sharing pornographic material.
Yeah. And when he tried to fix this, Meta fired him. They accused him that he's in a personal relation with me, and he know me and I know him. We talk, but I don't know him even. Until now, I don't know where he's from. So yeah, they fired the one that he helped fix my account. And there was someone from Instagram itself, like in a touch with me, like account angel, they called him or something, and trying to help me to my account. And the moment they fired Emily, she blocked me on WhatsApp. Did she change her number? So I don't have any connection with anyone there.
Hmm.
So yeah, I
you were a threat. You were a problem for them.
Yeah, and after I left, after kind of some of months, they start to delete videos from my account. They deleted around 80 posts.
Wow.
And I don't even see which post is deleted, so I know I can like share it again. I don't know. So they moved a lot of content from my
freedom of speech, they said.
Yeah, man. So and also, yeah, my like some of my videos, like the video of the two children in my hand, in my arms, it was labeled as fake news, or like fake report on Instagram that I'm faking it or I'm a liar. So yeah, there was a lot of restrictions, but people really supported me very well in this and helped me. But also, after like 2 years, I'm not going to keep telling people, oh, don't forget about me. Please share. Please follow me. You get sick in the end. Like you fight this, but it's in the end, it's their platform.
طب معتز, what was it like leaving Gaza or taking that decision to leave when it was time to leave for you? Was there a part of you that, I guess, really wanted to stay behind, but it just became too dangerous?
Yeah, it became very dangerous, actually. I took the decision after the Israeli tanks were on the end of my street. So I felt like I'm becoming like in a circle, I'm surrounded, I can go everywhere. I stopped using my car because you can't drive in these small areas and the streets, most of the streets are like destroyed. And there is 1.5 million people in there, which is like, it was like, all of us are 50,000 and it was crowded.
Yeah.
What about 1.5 million people in that area? So you feel like someone is choking you. And I felt like I'm repeating myself, and I felt that I'm losing friends every day, colleagues, especially after I lost Hamza Tahdouh and I lost Mustafa Treya.
I remember.
So I felt like it's getting closer, and I want to do more, you know. I can do more. So, okay, maybe from outside, I will go out, raise more awareness, make noise. This is my goal, making noise. And there was a chance to leave. I got denied multiple times, but yeah, there was people from my work trying to help, and it happened. It worked because they pushed a lot to it. And I got out with no plan, actual plan. And I came to Doha. And I...
How did you exit Palestine from the south?
Yeah, from Rafah crossing before Israel occupying the borders. And I got out and with no plan, what should I do? So I tried with my work to go to the US and make noise there. But things outside taking a lot of time to happen. So I didn't feel that outside people really feel us. They say they understand, they feel you, but they don't really feel you. Because if someone is dying and he needs a bottle of water, you will hear, you will take it very fast.
Yeah.
Make him a drink.
Yeah.
But from outside, you felt like they're watching, and they send you aid, and the aids on the border stand nothing entering Gaza. So you feel like, okay, they don't really feel what is happening, but all the efforts of the people are appreciated.
Have you ever been in a position where you wanted to take a picture of something, but at the same time you wanted to help the cause, and you were torn between taking the picture against putting the camera down and helping?
Yeah. There's actually a famous picture of me. Let me try to show you.
Please.
So yeah, that picture.
Okay.
Like with the injured guy having my cameras. And yeah,
you decided that, okay, I need to
Because what the hell, should I capture?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
He's seeking help, and he was under the rubble and a burning car beside him. So, and the big house got destroyed and lost here family members and also like friends here. It was in my street.
Mm.
The most awful picture I ever captured is in...
That was it.
Yeah, in my street. And I went to try to hold him, but his knee was out. The bones of his knee is out. And he was very, bleeding. And because the explosion of the palm was very strong, he was wearing clothes.
Yeah.
Where's the clothes? And so,
yeah.
And after 1 week, he passed. So,
Marham.
Yeah.
Was there ever anything that was too graphic for you to take a picture of? Like, you have limits.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I have. Like, I can come with my camera, take like a body that is into pieces, you know? And there is nothing to shoot. So there was a lot of times like with the cover people are like into pieces. What should I capture? What should I document? So yeah, there was a lot of times.
Does it keep you up at night? PTSD, nightmares from everything you've seen,
maybe
Marcos.
Nightmares, yeah. One time, like my mom was next to me, I was taking a nap. I'm trying to sleep, and sometimes it happens to me that I'm sleeping, but my body is shaking, my legs are shaking, my foot's like shaking, or like and it's shaking for like a few seconds and stop, you know. So she called me like many times, like it's happening to me. So I feel like this is because nightmare. Like,
nightmares.
Yeah. And also the smell of the bodies, the burned bodies. Sometimes I smell something similar to it. So I remember the days I was sleeping in the street and smelling the bodies of the people who are burned or the people who got killed for weeks and nobody got them out, and then we got them out. The smell of the bodies, that's really not a good smell. And
where did you get your strength to be able to tolerate all of this? I'm guessing you didn't have a choice but to do it for your people. But did you know that you were this strong growing up? Because
I'm not strong. I'm just, I was very disappointed and very depressed. I'm very. To know what to do in my life. And before it comes, a lot of people in Gaza committed suicide. A lot of youth, like young men, committed suicide because everything is closed and for them.
There's a high suicide rate in Gaza.
Yeah, and people like turning fire on their bodies and burn themselves alive. So nobody knows about this, that was happening. So I was like same with them, like multiple times I thought, okay, should I end my life because this life sucks, and you have a lot of power but you don't know where to use, like where to put it.
Yeah,
you know, you go to the beach and said, okay, like what should I do?
Yeah.
So it's not an easy life, and because also the experience, this is not my first time to cover massacres. Like I've witnessed a lot, as I told you before, and so you feel like your heart is kind of dead, you know?
You might be 25 years old, but your soul has seen
like
enough
most of
for...
your life is about this, so you feel like this is the normal.
Yeah.
You know?
You don't know what you don't know.
Exactly.
You don't know a life of calmness and no massacres every 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
That's your norm.
Exactly. And I found people outside here get into coma if they saw a blood.
Yeah.
I was keep like making fun of them. Mm. My God, you're alive. Like, you're real?
Yeah. You haven't seen shit.
So, yeah, they didn't see anything. And so, yeah, because this is the life I've been through and this is my life. And this is what I thought, that is everything is like what is happening here is happening everywhere, maybe. So, but yeah.
Has your work reached the heart of the opposition who have maybe reached out to you and showed empathy or sympathy from the Israelis that felt that this is so messed up what our people are doing?
Yeah, there is a lot.
Did you win them over like with your...
Yeah, once of time I was in the Time 100 event. In the U.S., in New York, and a Jewish American, an Israeli American came to me and he said, hey man, I know you, you don't know me, maybe I'm a comedian, a famous like Israeli comedian. I've been born and raised in Tel Aviv, and because what I witnessed, what I saw, and like what I saw through you, through others, and what I see and understand, I left from there. I will never live there again. But I'm Israeli, but now I'm American. And yeah, he thanked me. He took a picture with me. Yeah. And a stupid magazine took a picture of us from far away. And they wrote the title, Motaz Azaiza, the Hero of Gaza, with the Jewish comedian. I don't remember actually his name. And they posted like they want to make a problem for me.
Mm-hmm.
But they're very stupid that they think that I have a problem with the Jewish people.
Mm.
For me, it's fine. So, yeah, I touched that. But I don't really, because of like the anger inside me, maybe I don't see this. I receive a lot of threats still and a lot of messages from like Israelis, like calling me with bad words and these things. And they're happy about what's happening. But I don't really, I feel like it's like kind of spam. You feel like sometimes there's a lot of accounts that comment on the same thing, and I feel they are the same, but they're real people.
Yeah.
So, but I don't really feel like it's something that hurts me, you know?
Yeah.
I feel proud about it that despite all what happened, I'm still alive. I go to the places that they thought that they are the only one that are welcome in. A lot of people going out to the streets and calling the name of Palestine and for a free Palestine from the river to the sea, not only a two-state solution. Yeah, I feel them. They're like in kind of pain, you know, from this. When they go to places as a tourist and people kick them out from stores, and you see a lot of videos on social media from Israelis being kicked out from shops, from tourist places, Israeli actors, a lot of people go to their like the locations and they are filming it and keep making noise, not allowing them to do what they're doing. When I see like Palestinian films win like prizes, so our voice is very loud and we are everywhere. And they should just understand this, that the world is not for them anymore.
No.
Yeah?
Not today. You recently did Umrah.
Yeah.
When you're there in Mecca praying, what's going through your head? And maybe a step further than that, how has your relationship with God changed in your growing up years, going through what you're going through, praying for things that maybe haven't come in your favor yet? What kind of conversations are you having spiritually?
So when I went first time to Umrah, and they say when you first time see the Kaaba, you should like everything you pray for, like it's like you should be sure that God's gonna give it to you. I did my Umrah. I didn't touch the phone till I finished the Umrah.
Nice.
Take some memorial pictures. But I did the Umrah. My mom was with me, and as I promised her one day, one day me and you were going to go to Umrah. Alhamdulillah. And I promised and I was honest.
It's a beautiful sight, huh? When you see the Kaaba.
Yeah. And the people, and everyone's having something, wishing on God. But I didn't touch the Kaaba. I prayed. I talked to God in my head, and I prayed a lot. And I was like seeking forgiveness and everything I did in my life, everything bad, everything I wished like a good luck. I don't know. It was about me. I felt like this moment, it's the only moment I took for myself since I left. And hopefully we can go back again soon.
Our Palestinian voices today seen as journalists or truth tellers, would you say? And what would you say to journalists worldwide who still hesitate to want to speak freely and call it like it is, the new media, if you will?
Man, the problem is like for them, like first every journalist is like doing his work in an honest way, not having different agendas, like not like showing something and hiding something is really appreciated. But the problem like that, the problems are facing journalists that he may lose his life because of the truth, you know? So I was going to lose my life because I'm showing the truth. I'm showing realities, not anymore, not something else. So sometimes when you look to it, it's good that you're showing the truth. But sometimes it doesn't work to lose my life because I want to show the truth. You know, why should I lose my life because I'm saying the truth?
You get one life.
Yeah. And the problem also, you say the truth sometimes and nothing can change. So it doesn't work to show the truth. You know? Okay, it will be good to you, but you will get harassed with a lot of people who don't believe in this way. You will get harassed for like organizations or groups that you will harm them if you will show the truth. You will be criticized. You will be, they'll try to say a lot of rumors about you. They will fake news about you. So you should know that if you want to show the truth, it's going to cost you a lot. And in Gaza, it costs you your life.
Yeah.
So,
as you've seen,
if you feel truth, like, deserve to lose your life for, I wish to save your life, but I, because I did it, maybe I risked and I know that I'm going to lose my life any minute, any second, and I, this is why I did it, because I didn't have any option, and I'm doing what I'm doing, because I believe in it. You know, and I'm still doing it because I believe in it. Because if I don't, I'm not the kind of person who do things that you don't believe in, you know?
It's sincerity. You won't fake something. You do it if you feel that you believe in the cause.
The moment I fake something, people will notice that I'm faking. So
yeah.
I'm a bad liar. Yeah.
And the moment you no longer have the passion for photography, you'll take up another hobby, I would imagine.
Maybe, yeah. But I wish to die before I lose my passion for photography, because I was close to lose it, and I really tried to find a way to go back to camera, and I found, but now I'm suffering again to go back to camera, because your audience is expecting to see you and hear from you, and you are out of your zone, and your home is not in peace. And what you, because I used to shoot and show people, now when I shoot, like, okay, like a massacre is happening in Gaza, I'm not posting pictures from his photography trip. That doesn't make sense for me as a cousin. So I don't feel like it's the right time. And I don't know when this is going to end, because I'm really tired.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really mentally now. And believe me, I would rather to be in Gaza running here and there, be documenting what is happening than this suffering. Yeah.
Takes a toll on your mental health.
Yeah, because I feel my back is hurting, my heart, my neck, choking my head. And you don't have passion to anything. You move like you are a zombie.
Have you ever done therapy?
I'm
sure you suffer from PTSD, Martez.
Maybe. Yeah, I went to, like, I tried multiple times, but I felt like I'm answering questions, and I didn't feel that really someone is understanding what we are going through.
Well, they don't, unless they've been through it.
Yeah, and if they will go through it, they will be the same of you. So I don't know. I feel like I would like to keep myself busy. This is better for me.
Mm.
Yeah. Whenever I feel like I'm achieving things, that makes me feel good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good feeling. Can we talk about the UN for a second? Because earlier in the conversation, I said, I don't know if we were on camera or off camera, but I said that Palestine showed the world who everyone is.
Yeah.
And what kind of a person you are. How you feel, and I saw this on Instagram and I loved it. Someone said that how you feel and where you stand on the Palestinian issue will tell me everything on what you are as a person. Yeah. And I really, really believed in that. I just loved that saying. The UN, I believe, has failed Palestine. I don't understand how one country like the US, a self-declared democracy, can veto the world's call for a ceasefire. One country has that power. Where do you stand on that? And do you have any resentment towards the UN?
For me, it's something expected. I don't have any hope from them, actually. So I don't feel like I should wait something from them, nor should expect something from them. Because this has been doing for a lot of times. This is not the first time. And what should you expect from people that, not people, to be accurate, from a government that is supporting your, like, occupation with weapons and rockets? Because most of the rockets, most of the weapons, everything is written made by USA in Gaza. But also, millions of dollars going to aid, to help Palestinians from the US, but from people. But, maybe it's not nice to, doesn't sound nice to say that, but what should we do for this? How should we deal with this? We try to make pressure on the government to stop funding Israel, to stop sending their taxes to the Israeli occupation, stop giving weapons to Israel. But you're trying. You don't have any different weapon. So for me, I believe that the U.S. is like a reason for my suffer. Okay? But at the same time, through my organization that I work with in the U.S., I get a lot of funds, a lot of aid to my people in Gaza. So it's like I'm traveling next, like to the US, so hopefully they allow me to enter. But you, this country is killing you and giving you hope also at the same time, you know? So you feel like...
It's catch 22.
Yeah. And you don't know. What you should do for it.
Yeah. You don't know what to do.
You will boycott everything. You will not find help for your people or for yourself. So, I don't know. And after I left, I tried to understand the world. And I stopped thinking like the same way I used to think with. So I'm now trying to seek help from every way possible, from everywhere, from everyone who are very desperate, who are seeking any kind of help in Gaza, and any kind of help for my people. So if you'll help me, I'll be thankful. If you're not... At least don't lose his source, you know, because you're very desperate. You are in a position that you don't even wish for your worst enemy.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is what is happening now.
On the subject of Americans, though, U.S. taxpaying citizens are more aware than ever that a lot of their money is going to Israel, and they're asking themselves questions that they never asked them, at least not in my lifetime, which is, we have bigger fires to put out back home, like the homelessness problem in California, like the education system, like the war on gun crime.
And there is homeless people
everywhere. Have you seen LA?
Yeah.
Forget about what's happening now. Obviously, now it's crazy. But it's a disaster that a lot of people in this industry, Joe Rogan, Elon Musk, all these people had their headquarters. They were operating in California. They moved to Austin, Texas, because they couldn't put up with.
Yeah.
City like Los Angeles, where, you know, the homeless people are all over. So the point is that the Americans are noticing that, why are we paying Israel off to the billions of dollars a year when we can use that money to fix our country? At least those conversations are happening today. In my growing up years, 80s and 90s and 2000s, those conversations were never happening.
Yeah.
So it's a start.
Yeah, but on the cost of our blood.
On the cost of your blood.
Exactly. On the cost of more than 70,000 people lives. Doesn't worth it just to start asking questions.
Yeah. What difference is it making?
Yeah. And it led to nothing. So we don't feel
like... That's the depressing part.
This is the thing as a Gazan thinking about, as a Gazawi. The problem that when you have a problem of facing occupation and ignored people. So for me, fighting occupation is really, really... It's not easy, but for me, it's better than facing this ignorant people who are looking to you that you are tool of death and you should just suffer and die.
I get it.
You know, this weak me a lot, make me weak. This make me stronger.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because I'm a believer in my fight that is legal, and I will fight the occupation in every way possible. So because I've been facing a lot of things, and really, what made me losing sometimes the way that I'm meeting people who ask me, why did you come out from Gaza? Why didn't you die there? It's better for you.
People asked you, why didn't you die there?
I swear to God, I was in the US. I went to a school to visit some students, and a mother of the students, she's American, American Palestinian. She said, why did you leave Gaza? She was talking very angry. I said, like, because I don't want to die. Why didn't you die there? You'll be shaheed. You go and die there. It's up to you. You can take your passport, American passport, and go to Ben Gurion airport, and you can kill an Israeli soldier, and they will shoot you, and you will die if you like. But you don't want to do anything. You don't want to sacrifice anything. If you are ready to sacrifice, I will listen to you. But if you're just in the comfort zone, your children going to school, your children are safe, you have a toilet, you have food, you have electricity, you have water, don't ever tell me what to do, you know? So, man.
Your reality is so different to my reality.
Man, that's...
That you can't even entertain a conversation with anyone who hasn't lived a second in the shoes of someone who lived in Gaza.
Man, imagine you have a diabetes, by the shot, and you are in a tent, and there's just one artificial toilet, and there is 70 people in one line standing before of you, and you have diabetes, and everyone has a disease, and you standing like this, want to go to the toilet, but others also suffering from a lot of things. You'll do it on yourself. And this happened for people in Gaza. So imagine your position. Imagine you're like all humans are appreciated, but imagine you're like a doctor. Imagine you're a teacher. Imagine you're someone that has value in the community. And so this happened to you. Please tell me what you'll do. Like, please. How you gonna feel? You know?
It's humiliating.
Imagine that you have you have money, but your money doesn't worth anything because nothing to buy. Imagine you had a beautiful house, but Israel destroyed.
Yeah.
Imagine you are now in a tent.
Mm.
Imagine you are like a woman that got her period and there is no...
tampons.
Yeah. What you gonna do? Yeah.
Nobody thinks about
that. No, nobody did because they are not living these moments, you know? Yeah.
With you being in the spotlight these days, has it changed your relationship with friends, family, and maybe even the ability to fall in love? Do you think about marriage?
Yeah, like, this is like... Yeah, but at the same time, let's say today I don't always reach out to friends or call anyone. Or I don't feel like I can talk. I like to spend more time with myself and do nothing.
Are you an introvert or an extrovert?
There's
also something in the middle called an ambivert.
No, like what I feel these days, I want to be in my room.
Okay.
And my bed.
Introvert.
If I will do something, I will play games.
What's your favorite game?
Now I'm playing a war game, so Battlefield, Call of Duty, Far Cry. Yeah. Yeah, I feel like I want to stay in my zone that I have been living through a lot. Anything that is really new, I don't like to try anything, you know? I feel like I have a passion to try. And also like about friends and going to connect or something. Like most of the friends, and they are now like in Egypt or some other countries. Also a lot of them are still in Gaza. And you know, like with people like following you, and I'm also like kind of busy in my life, traveling here and there, raising awareness, meeting people, and most of them, their life is on hold.
Hold.
And I went once to surprise them and see them. And I felt shy even to talk about if there's any progress in my life. You know? Because I know how they suffered to find jobs, I suffered to build their life in Gaza, and most of the time they lost everything. And a lot of times I try to connect him to people I know. But the people I knew after I left, they are very just interested in me because they're glowing around me and social media, these things. When I connect him to, I call them, hey, how are you? Oh, hi, Mutaz. I tell them, like, a friend of mine, he need job, need work. I will connect to you. Oh, yeah, send me his number. Then they don't text them. They don't do anything. So there was like kind of a lot of fake caring for the people of Gaza. So
pretending to sympathize.
Yeah. When it's something knowing and it's gonna show on social media and
yeah, that's blah, worse blah, blah. That's worse than not even showing sympathy.
Yeah, you will find out, and they expect everyone in Gaza to beg them to find a job, to find a work, to send them money, to send them aid. They think because what they see on media that everyone there is easy for him to go and phone, hey, please donate for me.
Yeah.
No. The majority of Gaza doesn't ask for money, doesn't ask for donations. Like a lot of people now, there is a lot of aid trucks now entering Gaza. They are not ready to go and fight to get one bag of flour, because you think I'll be in my house, that's gonna come to me. I don't go to bring like an aid, because this is not my life, this is not me.
Yeah.
But no, people on social media think that because we used to see people in Gaza suffer, so this is them, and if he's not gonna call me, he's not gonna beg me, I'm not gonna help him. They think that everyone he lost his dignity, but not, the majority doesn't lose, will never lose their dignity. Yeah, so this is kind of shame. But what are you going to do? Like, as the beginning of the, after 7 October, millions of people are like caring, yeah, want to do, want to send money, want to donate, want to make things, want to come to Gaza, want to. But now, like, if you got busy, if you got bored, but if you believe in the cause, people still suffering. People, like, there's a lot of Palestinians outside of Gaza who need help. Like, a lot of people text me that we don't have a place in Egypt to stay in, because we are out of money, you know? If you are in Gaza having no work, but you have your house, so you are in your house.
Yeah.
But you lost your house, you lost your work, you can't work outside. And for our countries, it's not easy to get visa.
Yeah.
And so what you going to do if you don't have an attention, you don't have like millions of followers? So, okay. So people will help me because maybe I have a voice.
That's how you got your visa?
Yeah, because of my voice.
Because if you're following, you
yeah.
got lucky and they gave you a visa.
Yeah.
Residency.
If I was... if it was just regular one from Gaza, will he get the opportunities that I got? No. Well, like citizenship company will offer him like another passport to promote their work?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So to be real, if I promised myself to be real always, I face myself with these things. Yeah, like, no, they're not going to get the help because there is no glowing around them. Because there's a lot of fake people who are using the cause for themselves. And yeah, this is what's happening. And there's a lot of people stealing donations.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
And nothing reaches people, of course.
Yeah.
There's also good people. But there are few.
Mm. In Saudi, we have this centralized charity platform called Ihsan. And they do that so that money doesn't fall through the cracks through...
Yeah. I think Ahmed Shukairi about it.
Yeah, I think he told you Ihsan. Yeah. So that's basically run by the top. So whatever gets put in there is ensured to reach the intended target. If everyone was using different platforms, you could imagine how money will fall through the cracks and God knows where it could end up.
Yeah. So for me, I feel like... we need to fix ourselves, our situation from inside, so others can help us easily.
If Palestinians had full equal rights and Gaza wasn't under siege, what would life look like today on the ground? And are you hopeful that we can get there one day?
Yeah, man, we're going there. I mean, I'm going. I don't know about others, but if there was no, it's not besieged. If Gaza is open, or you mean Palestine all? I don't know. Like, you mean Gaza or Palestine?
Both.
Both?
Yeah. But let's focus on Gaza since that's
yeah, okay. That's you. If Gaza is not besieged, I will be traveling easily. So if we're going to meet, I'll tell you, okay, man, yalla, come to Gaza. You'll book your flight to the Palestinian flight, and you'll come to the airport of Gaza, as we used to have one, Israel destroyed. You've come there, it's just 2 hours from Saudi Arabia.
What year was it destroyed?
It was destroyed at the year of 2001. Yeah, it worked, I think 2001. It started working in 1998, I believe. And yeah, it just worked for 2 years and then Israel destroyed the airport.
And since then there has been no airlift?
No. So yeah, I will travel easily. I will order anything that's going to come to Gaza. I can sail in my sea, and I wish one day to get a boat so I can sail in the sea. Yeah. And
do you often think, when will the world eventually look back and scratch their heads and say, how on earth did we allow these walls to come up and it be an open air prison, and Palestinians cannot pass, and the Israelis control the gates, and humanitarian aid can't come in? Do you think, when will that day come that we're going to look back and say, how did we allow this?
When we get our freedom, they'll be sorry. But now we are on the weakest party, and I don't think the world looks to you because they care about you. They look to you when you have power.
When they need something from you?
Yeah, this is what's happening.
You think in your lifetime we can see a free Palestine?
Inshallah. I hope so. I'm not sure in these circumstances and how the world is acting now with a genocide. But you saw it, it's like we say in Arabic, يَرَوْنَهَا بَعِيدًا, or we say like a Quran, يَرَوْنَهَا بَعِيدًا وَنَرَهَا قَرِيبًا يعني. Yeah. But so it's going to be free one day, and inshallah, I wish to be alive in that day.
If you were to build a museum of Gaza 100 years from now, hypothetical question, what would you put in it? What story would you like to be told in that museum?
The stories of how we fighted a deep depression, the people who burned themselves because they are depressed.
That's crazy.
The people who are like fighting occupation, the children of the refugee camps, the people with dreams, the food of Gaza, the old cars that still people using there from 80s,
70s. Classic cars.
Yeah. How we made the car to move on the cooking oil.
Who was the best leader?
For me, Yasser Arafat.
He was the best one, huh?
He was the best one. Then nobody came after him. Yeah, we have a problem with leadership nowadays.
Mm.
We don't have one that we really, everyone is trust. And we wish someone to come to the leadership with like everyone is trusting him. But we don't have to. And this is maybe a problem in us so as people, that everyone, if he don't like someone, he criticize and attack him. But if he believe in someone, like someone, he just keep silence.
When it comes to indigenous nations like the US, Canada, Australia, you had people who were indigenous and then people who kind of like came and they occupied the land. And these are, if you will, Western countries. And eventually they became a one-state solution. Do you see that happening?
No. No. Like people who became a one-state solution, they at least the people didn't leave their houses.
Yeah.
And or at least they have their lands. But you say if you will make a one-state solution, okay, where should the people who are in refugee camps go to? Yeah. And the people who got kicked out from their lands, where should they go? Why should they accept a one-state solution without a right? And no, I don't see this happening.
Okay, say you were given control to provide a solution to that area. Hypothetically, what would you draw up? What plan would you suggest as a solution for this if somebody gave you the power to do that?
Okay, I'll say it like as I'm a two person. one of the Palestinian Mu'tazs who want to see his home is the people who occupy to leave or to be as a guest if he didn't kill any Palestinian before. And he can pay rent. We can use him for to pay rent
for the economy.
Yeah, and the first one who believed that from the river to the sea is all Palestine, with all the religions, like the holy religions and whatever you believe in, to your Palestinian, and the one who are very realistic nowadays, who want a solution. So maybe the second one will accept the two-state solution. But he will accept it, but he's not, he don't like it, but he's going to accept it.
Yeah.
He's going to say some words that he don't believe in it, but to save people's lives and to make people live in peace. So, yeah.
Would you ever see you taking on a new role in life, like in diplomacy or education?
No, I don't want this mess.
It's not for you,
It's like not for me, but I just want to stick in photojournalism. I don't want to
leave. That's it.
Yeah, if something that's really necessary to be in it, maybe I will serve for a few years and then leave. But I want to stick to my passion, because my passion is the one who made me today who I am.
Mm.
And I don't want to lose my way and my passion.
What makes you feel most alive?
Taking pictures in action.
Adrenaline?
Yeah. And helping others.
Mm.
Saving lives. And connect people to make their life easier.
Did you ever come close to being shot or killed?
Yeah, at the first days, I was looking for food and looking for open store, and I was having my AirPods and airstrike happened in the building that is there, and I knocked to the ground, and a truck hid behind a truck, and I was going to the store that's under the building, so tons of rubble on my head. And the next morning I found that the guard guarding this building is under tons of rubble. I was most of the time so close to be killed in Gaza, and God protected me. I don't know.
Alhamdulillah. The thing I value most in life today is
My life. Trusted me a lot to keep alive, so my life.
Yeah.
And my
principles.
My principles.
The thing that bothers me in life the most is
people that they are trying to show that they know but they don't know.
Mm.
And liars who lie to make money and hide the real suffer.
Like old media?
All the media. And people who shout for Palestine, but their attention is not to help the cause, attention to make money from the cause.
And they are those people out there, huh?
A lot of people. A lot of people.
That's cold.
Yeah, so you're in a time you don't know who's the honest one and who's the liar one.
And who's in it to make a buck.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah.
I wish I knew this when I was younger.
That life is not easy. And dreams come true.
Do you believe in the quote, God won't give you more than you can handle?
Yeah. You think that you can't handle, but you can.
I don't think there's another culture on earth that can endure what the Gazans are enduring.
Yeah, but also you should know that also you can't always say, oh, okay, this is God made it. Also, sometimes stupid people cause a lot of pain.
That's
for
true.
People.
That's true.
So you don't always, when you get in trouble because of you, You say, oh, this is God dwelling. Okay, God created you and made a brain for you to think and to choose. And some
mukhayyar. Yeah.
So don't make stupid things and then say to, this is God. No, God is not stupid. So stop using this way and don't use it. If I did something wrong, I'm not going to say, oh, God, he wanted me to do this.
Yeah.
No, God will never create Jannah and Nar because, okay, if he will do the things for you in this way.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I don't use this.
He gave the ability for people to make choices and then you will...
Yeah, then you're responsible for your choices.
And you will end up in heaven or hell based on the choices that you make.
Yeah, like... like someone who's like in Gaza is suffering and people when you tell the word that people suffering, people in Gaza are suffering, people are being killed, oh, it's good for them. They're like, it's like God wanted this. Okay, God created the word. Or when someone say that people like in pain, he lost his baby. Oh, he's, don't worry, God wanted him as a bear in Jannah.
Yeah.
Man, okay, but there's a reason for the killing of him. And why your children are not like bears in Jannah. So I don't like people who use their religion to justify things that by human made, you know?
Yeah.
I don't like this. It's not easy. And I don't like people who use their religion to fake people, you know?
Tell me more on that point.
Like sometimes people are like using religion, using Islam to get like, to touch the people's hearts, but to use them and use their religion for their agenda, not for Islam.
Yeah.
And this like, it creates a bad picture about Islam because people after that think, oh, this is because of Islam. No.
Yeah.
You know,
mushrikeen, yeah,
mushrikeen, and there's worse than also people who use like hadith, use the words of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, use the Quran just to promote their ideas, to promote these things, you know,
yeah,
and this is like worse than occupation.
I didn't think there was anything worse than that, but I agree with you. It is horrific. And finally, what do you want to be remembered for?
That I'm just human and I saved some lives, alhamdulillah. And the most Palestinian who exposed Israeli massacres against his people.
It's you.
Alhamdulillah. I wish I am. I don't know. But maybe there's more people before social media did this. But I wish to be remembered that the most Palestinian who fadah al-ihtilal. Exposed.
Embarrassed. Caught them, you know, with their pants down. Caught them red-handed with their hand in the cookie jar. And that's new media, and that's what you've done.
Alhamdulillah.
And most people on the planet thank you. Some won't. Tells you a lot about, you know, who's who. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for many, many, many things. The work you've done in the field, risking your life. What you have asked of yourself to do for the sake of the world seeing.
Yeah.
You epitomize the strength of new media. And the future, at least in this space, I think is bright. What comes after it is anyone's guess. But where we are in a position today to show what's happening compared to 20, 30 years ago when there were a few channels that'll show you what they want to show you.
Yeah.
I think the media space is in a good space now.
Yeah, and yes, and Mu'taz will go, others will come, and there'll be a new Mu'taz, there'll be a new Palestinians.
With more transparency.
Exactly. So we never end.
Thank you for sharing your story with me, Mu'taz.
Thanks so much.
I really appreciate it.
And I really, wish to see you soon, maybe in Saudi Arabia.
Inshallah. Good luck in the US, and we'd love to welcome you in Saudi when you want to come back for the next Umrah, inshallah.
Inshallah.